So I want to welcome all of you to Finding Value in Conflict, Navigating Workplace Mediation. So I want to first introduce myself, and then our panelists will introduce themselves. So I'm Catherine Connor. I'm one of the teachers at the Center for Understanding and Conflict, and then I also work as a mediator. So Karsten?
Yeah, my name is Karsten Pöschel. I'm SAP's global ombudsperson. And why an ombudsperson is now here in this dialogue of talking about mediation, I hope that we can clarify that.
Thanks, Karsten. Verena.
Yeah, my name is Verena, and I work out of Switzerland for Roche. And I have the great pleasure to lead a global community for conflict prevention and conflict resolution.
Thank you. And Pat.
Hi, Pat Lau. I'm with Intel Corporation. I'm the lead for Intel's Collaborative Mediation Program. I'm based out of Portland, Oregon. Very excited to be here and have this discussion with my colleagues here, as well as sharing information about the program.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life.
So I wanted to start with having each of you just briefly describe the program that you have within your organization, you know, how it started, how it works. So Pat, would you like to start?
Sure. Thanks, Catherine. So Intel's collaborative mediation program has been in place for 9 years now. It seems like a long time, and we've had kind of stops and starts along the way, but I think we've got some great traction and momentum. Now we actually expanded the program last year. It began by one of our HR VPs saying, you know, he'd really like to offer our employees another option to help them resolve conflict in the workplace. And I did some research at the time and realized that, you know, even though mediation in various other settings besides the workplace, and especially in high tech, had been in place for some time, it wasn't in our company. Frankly, to the best I could tell, wasn't in many other high-tech companies. So we decided to kick it off and try it, and it's worked great. I'm happy to provide more details later, but that's kind of a quick summary, Catherine.
Great, thanks, Pat. Karsten.
Yeah, at SAP, where I work for, a global IT company, 110,000 employees worldwide, we are running our mediation program, and we call it business mediation at SAP. We run that as part of our global ombuds office. And we have established the global ombuds office more than, I think, 12 years ago. And also the mediation program was started around that time. But we have combined more or less both since around about 8 years. So the mediation program that we run globally now is part of the offerings that SAP's Global Ombuds Office delivers. And if you wish, we can give a bit of a reason why that has happened. We thought the Ombuds Office, how we established this, is following the Code of Ethics of the International Ombuds Association. So we are independent from every organizational context. We treat every concern that is brought to us confidential, and at the same time, we are informal and act impartial in general, independent of mediation. And we often had situations where mediation, which was formerly somehow part of HR, was seen as it's a service of HR. And we often got also the question, is it safe to speak up? Is it safe to ask for a mediation in the conflict I have? If I'm asking for a mediation, will that be going into my HR file as an employee? So we made the decision to separate that from the rest of the organization. And yeah, since 8 years, we did that with good success, I would say.
Great. Thanks, Karsten. And Verena.
Yeah, thanks. So we had in several affiliates in some countries, we had mediation programs or conflict resolution programs. And about 3 years ago in 2019, there was a small group of people who addressed this need and the advantages of a mediation program on a global scale. And so we started off with gathering ideas, and then we had some workshops and sprints involving people from all over the world. And it resulted in 2021, so which was 1 year ago, that we have established this group. We call it a community. It's a global community. And this community is driving the topic here in the company on a global scale now. What we have done so far, what we were able to deliver in this past year, was on three topics. So first, we started off reaching out to our mediators or conflict coaches. We have a few around the world. And it was quite fun to reach out to them and now bring them together in a group. So we've just started doing that, starting with working with them, and we want to extend that group. And then secondly, we have started to think about training. So training for managers, training for mediators, I mean, people to become Roche mediators, and also for other people in human resources to upskill them for conflict detection skills. So this is in the making currently. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, we have started conflict coaching forums and supervision. So for those people who are actually taking the courage to deal with those sometimes very heavy and difficult cases, we said we want to offer a peer coaching platform. So we have started to do that, and we use that for supervision and peer coaching, and also for some training here and there, and to align our quality standards.
Great.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model.
So next is, why does it matter to have this type of program? How do you value the impact of the program on your organization? Anyone?
I'll chime in first here, Catherine. So from a value standpoint, I think we all read about the impact that conflict has in the workplace, whether it's loss of productivity, impact of morale, attrition, and there have been numerous articles about that. Mm-hmm. So, clearly the ability to have another resource that's available to our employees to help them navigate through conflict. We feel that there's value in not only helping the two employees work through the conflict, but we've also found, and I think we could all resonate with this, that conflict between two employees can expand pretty easily into the larger group, kind of what's called conflict contagion. And by really focusing on helping the two parties, it really does bring value to the larger group as a whole, especially if the two employees are, managers or even senior managers, which at Intel, we've been able to offer this program, and employees across the full spectrum of the company have been able to take advantage of it. Just a couple other quick comments about value. When we talk about value of mediation, you kind of immediately think about, okay, the value to the parties in the conflict, but there is the value to the company. We tell our employees we've got this program, and I can't tell you how many people feel a sense of pride that the company would offer something like this. Mm-hmm. As I said, we've expanded the program to other mediators last year, and the passion that they bring and the skill set just to the mediators themselves, and how they've been able to use that skill set, not just in mediation, but in other employee relations aspects, has been very valuable. And finally, we've been able to expand the value of the program beyond mediation to training, conflict coaching. As Verena has said, we put together a workshop called Pivot from Conflict to Collaboration, which has been extremely well received within the company. But that kind of was spawned by just our experience with mediations. So that's a few comments about how we see value. And if I could just quickly add, it's, you know, I stayed away from kind of, you know, we've saved, you know, $1 million here and $1 million there. We've not been able to quantify specifically, but what I've just spoken to does resonate with a lot of people, including our managers, as to the value of the program.
And if it's okay to step in here, Catherine, because I think I like what you say, that the value is hard to measure, because for me, it starts with tolerating that conflict is part of our human nature, and that we need different opinions in corporations also, to foster the innovation. And that just then, when the debates get heated and that after some limitations, people feel heard and not heard, that conflict then goes, I always describe it, along a fever curve. And when the temperature gets too high, then self-care and self-management, what we normally would expect, is not sufficient anymore. And you might then need medicine or a doctor, and offering mediation then to these parties where the conflict temperature exceeds a certain level and they are not able to deal with their own situation is something that I think is a value per se, and that is a respectful way of dealing with conflict in a corporation. And when you said you also see that success and what the mediators take out of it, I would also say people that went through the mediation and the management who has made use of mediation, they are strong promoters for us in the company. Maybe just to give you a rough overview, we are running mediations with a pool of internal mediators, round about 90. Not all of them are always active, but we have round about 90 colleagues around the globe that are supporting mediation via the Ombuds Office. And that is a great foundation also to serve the conflicts in the corporation.
Yeah, from our end, what matters is that people can work in their creative space. I mean, we are driving innovation, and innovation needs a lot of effort. And if people cannot work in their creative space, there's not going to be innovation. So, I mean, creative space needs psychological safety, and it needs a place where people can get rid of their roadblocks. And one of the roadblocks can be conflict. So if we can help with our mediation system to remove roadblocks, we definitely help people to go back into their creative space. So this is how we approach it. What can we do to help our people to get back to their creative space in difficult moments?
Yeah,
and we have started to collect some numbers for this. I mean, for all the mediators here in this room and in the audience, we kind of know this because we hear it from our clients. But in a corporation, of course, you need numbers. You need a bit of statistics, some research to it. And so we went through a good bit of research that we found that was available. And there were significant numbers that we could use. For example, in one of the studies we looked into, they said unresolved workplace conflict costs on average 2.1 hours per week per employee in a company. So we did a little bit of math, calculated that for our company. And so, I mean, that's quite a significant number. And as Pat mentioned earlier, when you don't do anything, the impact is a loss of productivity. People may resign, you run into legal aspects in some of the countries. So there is for both, for the individuals and for the company, there's a lot you can gain if you help people to address their conflict in a constructive way.
Could I just touch on one aspect of value, Catherine, and that is, you know, the concept of value includes the cost to implement a program like this. And at Intel, you know, I feel very fortunate to work at a company that, you know, has a lot of resources available. But, you know, the cost to implement this program, just to clarify, the mediators in our program work on this program about 10 to 20% of their time. And the rest of the time, they're working on other jobs. And that the cost to sustain this program, frankly, is fairly minimal from a financial perspective and is fueled by the passion of the mediators themselves. The big cost has been, frankly, the training when the program first kicked off and growing the program last year with additional training. So from Intel's perspective, our costs are fairly minimal to implement this program. Yeah. And I feel it can be done in a smaller to medium-sized company. I heard Karsten say that SAP has 110,000, Intel has about that number also. But you don't, you know, it can be done in smaller, medium-sized companies also with minimal costs.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's a great segue into my next question, which is, what do you wish you knew as you were starting up the program in your organization that other organizations, whether small, medium, or large, could benefit from knowing now as they're starting to look at or start one of these programs?
I would repeat the point which I touched earlier to say, the program itself, if you group it under a function like an ombuds office, which you might have in place in a certain corporation, or not, but a mediation program needs to have a high degree of independence. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And it also, people need to see that it is decoupled from other formal functions, so that it is not part of the same organization where the HR business partners, for example, are reporting to, so that people have the trust to reach out. Because I feel it takes a step for colleagues to come and ask that they were not able to manage the conflict on their own, right? So it's a step to ask for help. And this needs to be kept in a very trustful and confidential setting. And yeah, you can design that in the most possible way in a company.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of vulnerability to coming to some other part of the organization saying, I can't manage conflict, and so help
I
me
failed.
Out. You really want to create that safety for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, I would like to add and encourage everyone to start. Start small, if that's what the options give you in your company, and then grow after a while. It will most likely take some time until senior management or the larger company is convinced. However, start and then take it step by step. And it's very important to do the stakeholder management. I'm going back to the previous question, why does it matter? It does matter. There's a lot in there for the company and for the individuals and for innovation. So, and there's literature out there and studies which give you good numbers. So that helps for stakeholder management and convincing why it matters. There's, on one hand, there's the passion side, and on the other side is, of course, always making sure that you can show the value to the stakeholders and to the decision makers.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding in Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community, with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
One of the things I wish that we had known, Catherine, to your question there, is so, and again, getting back to something that was said earlier about the vulnerability that parties need to be open to move forward with mediation, and we face that at Intel, and probably looking back on it, when we'd first started, I would have presented and tried to include in the training about the collaborative mediation program the concept of normalizing conflict, making it, and we've recently put together a presentation about normalizing conflict where we distinguish between productive conflict and unproductive conflict. And as Verena was saying, you know, we acknowledge that, you know, productive conflict is needed in a company to be creative, to be innovative, to challenge the status quo. And we've kind of put some definitions around what is unproductive conflict and what is productive conflict. Mm-hmm. So that, again, this is part of just helping people realize, hey, conflict happens to everybody. Yeah. And you know, if you can resolve it on your own or directly with the other party, that's mm-hmm. fantastic. If you can't, mm-hmm. it's okay to ask for help. Mm-hmm. I think a statistic, Verena, in some of the studies that you recently said is that 40% up to, well, actually 25% of people when they're in conflict choose not to do anything about it, which you know, is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so we try to offer this as a resource and help them understand that it's okay to take mm-hmm. advantage of this resource.
Mm-hmm. And that is a huge mindset shift for probably most of the companies. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. And so I think it's very important to support this mindset shift, to take away this part of shame, I would say, mm-hmm. and drive more towards what is in it. I mean, like Pat always says, the constructive part mm-hmm. of conflict, how can we use it to drive innovation, to drive a better working environment?
Yeah.
Shed light on the positive aspects.
Yeah. And as there is a fine line between a productive conflict and yes. a non-productive conflict,
yes.
I think it's hard to blame then the parties that they, yeah, more or less cross that line. And I wish that it becomes natural that at a certain point in a conflict, when my picture with the temperature curve, when the temperature gets too high, that it becomes even more normal than today that people are asking for mediation. Mm-hmm. I remember, I would say 20, 25 years ago when I started my first management role, having a coach was something which you mm-hmm. might not have shared with everybody. But today I think it's very common practice that mm-hmm. Managers who want to grow, that they are also having a coach supporting them at their side. Having a mediator is a secret right now. And I think that is something which we can and should change because there's so much value in it.
Hey, Karsten, we have a question. And just for people or attendees, feel free to put questions into the Q&A. And one question is, Karsten, can you speak to the challenges involved in decoupling mediation from the HR function in SAP?
I thought I did it a bit. The Ombuds Office, which we have established, is running completely independent from organizational settings and HR. So there's no connect between us and the work we do with our clients. Whoever comes in a difficult situation to the Ombuds Office, of course, sometimes it's conflict, but there are also other circumstances when people are speaking with us. And I would say that construct of having such a, in general, having such a place which is not part of formal organization and settings, be it HR or something else, is a good way to decouple the function. And our service that we offer in as ombud services is of one pillar is the consulting with individuals in conflicting situations. One pillar is conflict clarification, and that is mediation and the pool of mediators who support us there. They are part of that pillar. And we have conflict counselors around the world who support us there as well. And the third pillar is conflict prevention and training. And having said that, I also wanted to share that starting a mediation program also creates a lot of synergies, right? Training people in conflict prevention, gaining additional colleagues to support worldwide other colleagues when they are in difficult situations. So there is a lot of momentum that can be created when you started somewhere, as Verena said earlier.
Thanks, Karsten. And Verena, there was a question that said, would we be able to get those research that Ms. Newhold mentions? So I'm hoping maybe we can get some links. I know one of them we gave to you, but if you can get us any other links, we'll send it out and we do a follow-up email and we'll send it out to people so you can see what's available.
Catherine, could I just tag on to what Karsten said also?
Absolutely.
So I just want, within Intel, although we don't have a formal ombuds program the way SAP does, our collaborative mediation program is separate from the HR program. We partner closely with HR to get referrals if they're dealing with employee relations, but we also get referrals from management and employees themselves come to the program. Mm-hmm. But our program, we don't collect any data that stays within the HR database. It's totally separate. Mm-hmm. As mediators, we do not report out to anybody about what takes place to management. And that level of that positioning about regarding being kind of alongside but outside the mainstream of our HR program has been essential to the success mm-hmm. of the program. When two parties come into a mediation at Intel, we begin as mediators and we clarify what our role is and what we would say if we were asked by somebody else who might know that the mediation is taking place, that all we would ever say up to our CEO is that, you know, it was a good meeting. Please assess the effectiveness of the mediation and the mediation program based upon how well they're working together. That's all we would ever say. It served us well. It builds trust and the psychological safety for parties to participate and really share the heart of what the issues are.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So that was actually a great segue, Pat, into the next question, which is what's working well in your program? So that might be, how do you get the word out? How do people come into the process? You know, aspects of how you do it, you know, anything that you could describe as, these are the things that actually work well and you might want to incorporate into your program. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Sabrina,
shall I go ahead?
Start? Yeah.
So how do we get the word out? At the moment, we are a bit slow on marketing this program because we need time to make sure we can deliver on the quality that we want to deliver. And so we haven't really gone out and marketed the service. So it's really for us currently is word of mouth. And we see particularly here in Switzerland, people are really making use of this service, which is great to see. What we do is always we make sure we diligently check in with the people to make sure we really understand the matter. This is something I would also give as something to consider for everyone who's thinking about such a system, Sometimes the conflict doesn't present itself at the surface. And it sometimes takes some time in-house to figure out what is it really that the party, that the person needs. And there's a fine line to maybe compliance issues and mediation, or maybe insufficient leadership, or whatever it could be. So we always spend a good bit of time on talking to the people to find out what really the topic is they need to solve. Once we have done that, then it is very important to find the most suitable mediator. And we have many cases that are cross-border because our teams just work cross-border. And then we need to figure out what language do we need? How do we make sure that the mediator does not know the parties? So it's a bit of a, to make sure that the person is really neutral. So this takes also a bit of time to find the right person who deals with the case. And then what we found out, what works well also, is that we hold individual meetings with both, with all involved people. I know there's kind of different schools, a bit of a different approach to holding individual meetings. For in-house matters, I feel it is very important to get a feeling of voluntarity of the involved people. You know, we sometimes play with or deal with hierarchical situations or certain hierarchical dynamics. And it's very important to understand what is the driver and if people come to us voluntarily. So that's why we feel it is important to speak to people individually before we go into a joint meeting.
Great. Thanks, Verena. Karsten or Pat?
Pat, do you want to go?
Go ahead, Karsten.
Yeah. I think what works well in getting the word out is, first of all, yes, we run campaigns and we promote the mediation service again and again via leadership newsletters, board area specific newsletters. But I think a lot of demand also comes in via, I would say, the reputation that former mediations created, and that HR also sends conflicting parties directly to us. All that leaders also see that there is a conflict in their team or even with them involved. Karina talked about also about the hierarchy, who then also come and ask for the service. And when someone comes to ask and ask for a service, which can either happen via a dedicated email that we have set up, confidential, and where only a very small group of people out of the ombuds office have access to, or they come via face-to-face, we have one dedicated colleague who, I mean, she does a wonderful job in then finding out what is needed. Is it really a mediation, or, for example, if there is a compliance case pending or an investigation running, we would never agree to step into a mediation. So there's a bit of a pre-work done before. Mm-hmm. And also then that everybody from the client side is voluntarily willing to participate in that mediation before we then say we now search for mediators to support you in the mediation itself. And that is all that for us is a structured process. First of all, we run mediations always with two mediators, so co-mediation, ideally male and female if possible. And then we inform the complete pool of mediators, dear colleagues, there's a conflict we roughly give them in which organization it is. We don't tell in which team and we don't talk about people, but we say, okay, it's in the board area XYZ, in the team, in the organization of. So what we aim with that is that the mediators themselves decide that they are not volunteering for mediations that happen in their own organization. With that, we also try as much as it is possible in a corporation that mediators and conflict parties are very far away in the normal business from each other. And then people come back and report us, yes, I would be able to run that that mediation, because as also Intel is doing, our mediators are doing mediations additionally to a normal job wherever in the company. And then we decide on two appropriate colleagues, be it language, be it nationalities, be it cultural context. And we also run a lot of mediations in the meantime, international and also remote. And then we give the name of the two mediators to the clients and let them check if they had a former work relationship, maybe they were in the same team. And then if they come back and say, no, we don't know these mediators, there is no personal relationship, then it's the time where we give the names of the clients to the mediators, and then they start the mediation process. And to come back on what Pat said, then we from the Ombuds Office, and no one else knows about the outcome and the content of that mediation. That stays in that confidential space with the two mediators and the clients. The only information we then get as more or less the orchestrators of the mediation is, yes, we have done it, it's finalized, and that's all. It has happened.
Great.
And I think that's a proper process. I would say that's something where I really could say we it took us a while to get there, but this is a stable process to also respect confidentiality, to ensure that impartiality is guaranteed, even if the mediators are internal mediators working in the same corporation as their clients. Mm. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Carsten.
The only thing I would add beyond what I spoke earlier about the structuring the program with confidentiality and the psychological safety that exists is something that Carsten just mentioned, and that we run the program with co-mediators, and we're very fortunate to be able to do that. I know in many situations the resources aren't there, but to have two mediators there to prepare for the mediation, to actually conduct the mediation and work together, and then to debrief together, learn together, mm-hmm. and if it's been a tough mediation, to console each other together, is something that really does help sustain the program and really builds camaraderie amongst the team. So that's something that is working very well.
Right, thanks. So I have
some questions in the chat, quite interesting ones.
So we had a few questions that have come in. Mm-hmm. So first one is, what do you tell employees who go into mediation in terms of what the program cannot do? How do you manage expectations?
I can go.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one thing we do very diligently in our, I call them the pre-meetings, where we feel the temperature and where we want to learn what is really the matter. And then we are very open and blunt and say, we don't take a decision for you. We do not take, we do not drive the content. We are very direct on that we expect the people to take ownership of the content and to be really open for reflection. We sometimes run into a situation that whatever manager calls and says, hey, I need your help to tell person XYZ that he or she is not meeting up to our expectations, then I say, that's not what mediation is for. So it's very important to be very clear that we help them to drive the process in a very positive and open and trustful way. That's our role. And however, that the content and the reflection and the way to compromise or the way to solution is up to the participants.
Great, thanks, Verena. So another question is, have you had any situations where a completed workplace investigation into a complaint later gets transferred to your mediation department?
Yes, a lot. Because not just that the situation is not resolved, it might even be a tougher conflict after someone started a compliance complaint, and it has been investigated, and a couple of colleagues have been involved in these investigations, maybe the complete team, and then compliance comes back and says there's no evidence of a violation of our anti-discrimination policy, for example, but then they still are there. They still are in a conflict. And we often have that situation that we then offer, or they even compliance offers them to now start maybe a discussion if a mediation could be something to get them back into a workable environment with each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, after such a process, there are so many wounds, and I mean, there's no talk about healing them and more or less getting back to normal. But how do we deal now with that situation? How can we work trustful, or at least respectful, with each other and get our work done together? That is something that can be clarified in a mediation afterwards. Yeah?
Great. Pat, it looks like you have something more to add to that.
At Intel, if there is a concern regarding a clear violation regarding statutory, such as discrimination, harassment, that clearly goes to investigation. We would not address that within mediation. But there's a broad spectrum, as we all know, regarding communication style differences, working style differences, and even roles and responsibilities. That is a whole other area that we are open to, but we would not typically do a mediation while an investigation is going on. Yeah. However, we do mediations after investigations are completed. And amazingly, investigations don't solve a working relationship issue, unfortunately, to some people's surprise. And what we find is that actually, after an investigation, whether there's no finding or even if there's a finding, the working relationship has gotten even worse. And those are some of the tougher mediations, as Carsten mentioned, that we have.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model.
So another question, how often does mediation not have a positive result? And what's interesting is, you know, what would you define as a positive result? Because it may or may not be that there is some, you know, agreement reached. So
at Intel, we do a survey about 3 months after the mediation is held. And our survey, again, anonymous survey results indicate that about 80% of the participants feel that the mediation was instrumental in helping them resolve the conflict. So that's kind of the statistics that we have at Intel.
Yeah, that resonates, and we are doing the same. We are doing a survey short after the mediation happens and 2 to 3 months after then to see if something changed. But I would even say, what is it? I mean, I sometimes also with clients, and especially when there are managers involved who have certain expectation also from you as the mediator now have to solve it, that I say a positive outcome can also be that the parties recognize that there is no joint way in the future, that someone might step out of the project or someone might look for another job in the company. That's, nobody wants to hear that. But the situation before is so tense and people are suffering, really, and mental health issues are there a lot, that from a helicopter perspective, you could say it was good that this mediation happened and they got clarity that there is no way back. And I would grade even that one as a positive result of a mediation, even if the parties surely would not do that.
Yes, I agree to that. There's many ways to define successful mediation. And successful mediation can be if I have conversations with the participants and I help them to honestly reflect and find a way to their own needs and discussing more openly, then I would say that is already a success. And maybe on top of that, maybe they find even a clear agreement on how they will work together, which would be some more success that you can measure. But I would still value the first part as a success as well. And I just saw another question here in the Q&A, whether we ever conclude written agreements at the end. And yes, we do. And I find that the participants appreciate it. That gives them like a handle, like something to hold on to, and it gives them clarity. And I find that sometimes we do that after an intermediate point in time, and sometimes at the end, and I find that they appreciate it. It's the question was whether it's legally binding. I mean, it's definitely a document that is confidential in between them, so we don't keep it. It's just for them. It may be on a flip chart, it may be on a piece of paper or in an email that they send to each other, so they own it. We don't share it, and it's just for them to take home.
Right. Thanks. So next question is, what have you learned about applying the understanding-based model that the Center for Understanding Conflict trains people in, about applying that in a program like yours?
So for me, Catherine, really the understanding-based model is really suited for workplace mediation for a few reasons. First of all, in most cases, this is about finding a way to continue to work together in the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, allowing yourself to explain to the other party and trying to understand where the other party is coming from is really the approach that facilitates an ability to find ways to work together in the future. So that's one thing I would say. You know, at Intel, we have talked, and it's mostly applies to technical issues. And that is that if there's a technical problem, it needs to be solved at the lowest level. In other words, those that created that technical issue and there's the problem, that's where it needs to be solved. And I think that the model that speaks about the parties own the conflict. So who better to build the working relationship or rebuild it, I should say, than the two parties themselves, which again, you know, I think that the model facilitates. And if I could just add one more thing, you know, at Intel, again, as it applies to technical issues, it's root cause. You know, let's root cause it. And again, the model itself speaks to, you know, getting to the heart of the matter. And, you know, Verena mentioned about kind of getting beyond the superficial as part of the triage process. And getting to the heart of the matter, you know, we all know the initial presentation of the problem in most cases is not what is at the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought about why the model is so great for us at Intel and in the workplace.
Yes, I absolutely agree with what Pat is saying. So this understanding-based model, I mean, that is the heart of how we want to do mediation. It is the way how I was taught mediation over here in Europe, to really put emphasis on what are the parties' needs, what are their wishes, and to make that understood by the other one. So that's really, really key to it. If we want to help people in a sustainable way, it's key that they listen to one another and that they understand one another. only then they can start working on a sustainable solution to their matters.
Yeah, I fully agree what Verena, what you said, and also what you, Pat, says. And I just wanted to add, the understanding-based model, or Gary's model, I would say, is part of all, is part of the mediation institute, of most of the mediation institute who teach mediation also here in Europe. So I would say when we mediate within the company, the understanding-based model is one of the basic foundations, how we also, what's our understanding about how we mediate in the company. And you might know these situations. Sometimes people describe it as a magic moment when something happened between the conflict parties in the mediation. That is the moment when they defocus from their rationality and start to feel what the other person needs right now. So these magic moments when emotions kick in, and that happens among colleagues. So emotions are part of the workplace as well. And I think there's no difference. We are human beings, and people can understand the other party better if they also can hear what was hurting the other person. And this is not something technical. This is something that comes from the heart or from the stomach. A full yes.
Thank you. We have another question. Do you have participants sign an agreement to mediate or participate?
At Intel, Catherine, we do not. So participation in the mediation process is voluntary. I think we touched on that a little bit. So to move forward with mediation, to have both parties show up at the quote unquote table, they both need to agree to that. We do separate the distinction between learning about the mediation program and actually the mediation itself. And we try to create a framework in which we, quote unquote, strongly encourage employees to, at a minimum, learn about the program, what it may offer, what it may not offer, is it suited for them or not, before saying no, okay? And after they learn about the program, then it's voluntary whether to move forward. So that's how we distinguish it, and we do not require anything in writing.
Yeah, we don't require anything in writing from the conflicting parties. But maybe as an additional information, what we do is we have a kind of a code of ethics for the mediators. So mediators that support us in the mediation pool, they have signed a document which also gives guidance how we expect them to run a mediation, about impartiality, about confidentiality, and all other aspects that we would wish from a professional mediator to agree to.
Great, thank you. So another question I want to make sure I have time to get to, which is, how have you attended to the issue of power and authority dynamics when you're working within a hierarchical structure? And people may have concerns about mediating with someone that's a different level. And I think you alluded to this a little bit earlier, Rena, but is that something that you, how do you address that in your mediations or in your program information?
That's definitely an aspect that we would address in our pre-meetings to make sure that the expectation is clear from both sides. And I think the pre-meetings where we can discuss openly with everyone is key to build trust, for all participants towards the mediator, that the mediator truly is taking a neutral and guiding stand here.
At Intel, 50%, about 50% of our mediations are between an employee and manager. And we try to be very clear when we are conducting these mediations that we don't, quote unquote, step on the authority that the manager has to assess the performance of the employee. However, we also believe, and it is, a manager's role to support employees, to help understand how they can help them be successful. And those are the areas that we focus on in mediations between managers and employees. If an employee gets a negative performance review and they want to change, we would not do a mediation specifically for that. Mm-hmm. But if mm-hmm. the two parties want to meet in order for, let's say, the employee to help convey and have the manager support him or her more, and we would absolutely facilitate a mediation meeting like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe to add on that, what Pat just said, we also are mediating managers and employees, but we also have sometimes teams where the manager also is part of the conflict. And what we do is that we also respect the hierarchy in the mediation dynamics. When we are in a hierarchical group, for example, we let the authority open the meeting and then ask explicitly also to hand over, I don't know if this is the right wording, the baton, so kind of also a symbol that now we as the mediators are in charge of the process. Mm-hmm. And what we also do is that we articulate that there is management in the room, and that we on one side invite for open dialogues and discussion as deep as possible, but that after the mediation, people will have to work in their normal structures, and that we ask them to take control of what they say and how far they can and how far they want to open up themselves. And at the end of a hierarchical mediation, also we hand back the baton to the manager. So now it's also a symbol that then the manager is also responsible for handling the conflict in the team. Yeah, he's again in the lead, and as a manager, he has also a responsibility independent of the mediation to work with conflicts in his responsibility.
Oh, thank you. So we have one last question that I wanted to address. Someone wrote in that they're interested in workplace mediation. They're a mediator now for the court system in New York and a retired attorney. How do I get started in this field? I'm a new member to CUC and all my work is virtual at this time. So any ideas from the three of you? And I'm also going to invite our attendees that if you have ideas about this, you could put them in the chat. So this could be a place where we're all kind of brainstorming the ideas we might have. How do you get into workplace mediation? Any thoughts from the three of you?
I could start.
First, always this, please.
I would say, have a focus on smaller and mid-sized companies. Maybe you have heard that both Intel, SAP, and also Roche, we are running most of the mediations with a pool of internal colleagues. Not saying that there are not some situations where we even might ask very experienced external mediators to step in for a certain situation, but I think this model that I described earlier, that the mediators and that the clients are very separate and don't know each other, so that really an impartiality is given, you cannot fulfill that in a small company where everybody knows everybody. So I think that's the field where external mediators should have a strong voice in mediating in a workplace. I would even go that far to say in small companies, I wouldn't suggest the company to start an internal mediation program like we did in large corporations, because you would not be able to maintain that in the confidence and in the impartiality. So I see that as a field to act.
So it's really getting the word out to all those smaller companies that might not have the resources to have internal media, is that you're available. And so thank you all for joining us today. And we look forward to seeing you at future Center for Understanding and Conflict events.
It was a pleasure with all of you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you to today's guest for being with us today and to our CUC Connect members whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the Understanding-Based Model at www.understandinginconflict.org.